Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing with your friends and family and associates. It's just wonderful how the show continues to expand. We've got one heck of a topic here today. We've seen the wildfires out in California. You know what? We got emails from people who got stuck with 2 and 3 feet of snow in Wisconsin, and they're having pipe issues. We're having, you know, roofing issues. We have other wildfires in Nebraska, Oklahoma, extreme weather. It just batters communities nationwide. But the big thing here is there's a hidden crisis emerging alongside that physical damage. And what it is a sharp rise in contractor fraud, targeting homeowners desperate to make urgent repairs, from roof collapses, bursting pipes, to flooding, structural damages. Storm recovery has become a prime opportunity for bad actors posing as licensed contractors. With federal data showing tens of thousands of home improvement fraud cases, hundreds of million dollars in losses. And you know what? We're going to examine why storms create the perfect conditions for scams, how homeowners are being exploited, and the practical steps families just like you can take right now to protect yourself before signing a repair contract. Now, this takes somebody with experience and knowledge and, been around. So we have John Grishpol. He's the co-CEO of Great Builds, a home renovation expert with deep experience helping homeowners navigate through contractor selection, avoiding costly bid traps, and protect themselves from fraud. John works closely with consumers during high-risk moments like post-storm recovery and is here to break down the warning signs, the mistakes people make under pressure, and what homeowners should do before they hand over a dollar. John, I want to welcome you to the show. I really, really appreciate you being here.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for having me.
This is wonderful. I'm really excited. So if I get too excited, just let me know. So let's just talk first point. Why do winter storms and extreme weather consistently lead to spikes in contractor fraud?
So there's a few major points that are important to touch on here. Most importantly, I'd say that predatory contractors take advantage of situations that are high stress and high urgency. And whether it is damage caused from a wildfire or a winter storm, if you have a leak in your roof and it's dripping into your home, that is not something that you feel like you can take the time to really spend to find the right contractor. So there's the urgency there and the fear that my home's going to get even more damage for every second that I wait. So times like those, especially when it's high demand, right? Everyone's having this issue. Everyone's having leaks or home damage caused from storms, whatever it is. So all the contractors are busy. The good ones are busy. And when you reach out to those and they don't answer, you panic. And a lot of homeowners find the first contractor they can get in touch with. That contractor comes out to their property and tells them that they can fix it. And a lot of homeowners don't feel like they can take the time to properly evaluate the contractor. The contractor promises that they'll solve the problem, and homeowners often feel like they have no other choice but to hire that contractor.
You know what? When we first started looking at doing this episode, I had a flashback to like 15 years ago where my wife started soaking something in our upstairs laundry room, and she fell asleep. And the next thing we know, I walk out to the garage and my garage door is going up and down and water's pouring out garage door opener. So you've never heard that. I know you've never heard that, John. But it was one of those things where we're like, oh my God, we've got electrical issues. We got all this stuff. And, you know, you're right. The good contractors were hard to find, or not hard to find, but they couldn't start for a few weeks. And the ones that were not so great, for some reason, had the lowest bid by 20 or 30%. And they could, you know, start in a couple of days because all of a sudden, hey, we have an opening in our schedule because somebody canceled. I was lucky enough to have my next door neighbor who is a consulting general contractor for big projects. And he just said, Steve, let me show you how to make sure you don't have some problems. You don't have mold issues. And guess what? Let me give you a recommendation on the right contractor. And basically it took a couple of weeks, but we did a great job. And we have heard from other people. I probably have 300 emails from people who are talking about, you know, I went with the first one. I didn't even check them. You know, I just said, okay, we can get it done. Let's do it. So, yeah. So I see that. I can see how that, oh my God, I got to get it done. I'm going to have mold, or I'm going to have this problem, or I've got a party coming, or whatever the case may be.
Exactly. And I think something that's really important for homeowners to understand is that I'd say often contractors that are damage remediation contractors offer to do everything for you. They do all the damage remediation, drying out anything that's wet, mold remediation, that type of thing. And since they're already in your house, you already have an open contract with them, they will often offer to do the rebuild as well. I will say that is the exception, not the rule. It's the exception that it could be a competent contractor that can handle everything start to finish. And what homeowners, I think, should realize is that in times of urgency, in times of immediate damage like this, if you have water intrusion or anything like that, step one is mediate the damage, right? Stop the leak, reduce anything that is cause for concern. If there's a hole in your roof, patch that hole in your roof. That's step one. And as soon as you clog that leak, then you can take the time to really find the right contractor that's best fit for your needs. You don't always need to panic hire, like you said, that first contractor, regardless of what their bid looks like. If they're available, if they say they can start tomorrow, that seems like the right fit. Let them do the remediation. Don't necessarily need to work with them for the full scope of the work.
That's important to know, because a lot of people say, hey, I can just get it done with one person. But a lot of times, well, not kind of, I don't have the experience you do, but basically what you're saying is sometimes they're really good at the remediation, but they're not the best at the other stuff.
Exactly.
And it makes sense to bring somebody in and say, okay, that's done. Let's bring in the next one.
Yeah, I was just going to say it goes deeper than that. That concept applies to so many different areas in our business because I work primarily with general contractors. And by definition, all that means is they are a project manager, right? They have a network of subcontractors and or crews that they work with to handle electrical and plumbing and framing and foundation. That said, some of the GCs that I work with specialize in kitchens and bathrooms. Other ones specialize in new construction, home additions, ADUs, that type of thing. So homeowners come to us sometimes. They say, oh, I really love this contractor I worked with for my kitchen. I think I'm going to hire them to do my home addition too. And I say, hold on. Do they have experience with home additions? Are they competent at that? Or just because they have a license and they offer to do it, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that they will be the perfect fit for that job.
You know what? That's very interesting you say that, because when we were, you know, we bought a new home and you have to redo your whole backyard and everything like that. And one of the things that my neighbor also taught me is we ended up with two contractors, one to do the backyard, but another one to like a plumbing contractor to do the gas for the barbecue, which I didn't really get that. But it made sense because my neighbor went with another one and you know what? They had the gas company come out and shut them off because the people that did it used the wrong pipe. And it basically, they had gas leaking up for their lawn. And it, you know what? They couldn't find the contractor, all that kind of stuff. You've heard the story before, but they're just real interesting.
All too often.
So, we have about 2 or 3 minutes left on this segment. You know, the numbers are staggering. Why do these fraud cases typically look like when, you know what, do these cases look like when, how can you tell a homeowner when things don't look right?
Sure. So ideally you catch them before it's too late, right? And I'll say that a few of the telltale signs is if a contractor is going door to door saying, hey, I was just working at your neighbors down the street, just finished up a job for them, or they had a leak and I patched that for them. I'm currently working on doing the build back. I've got some extra materials. I can give you a good deal. Or if they claim to be, a certain type of contractor, but don't have the proof to showcase it. They won't give you a license number. They won't give you any written documentation. They ask you to pay with cash or Zelle instead of check or credit card, right? Those are some shady things to look out for when evaluating a contractor. And then certainly, like we've already touched on, if the bid sounds too good to be true, if you did have the time to get two or three estimates, and this lower estimate is 30%, 50% lower than the other two, do you think they have a crystal ball? Do you think they have some magic trick to somehow remodel your home for cheaper than everyone else? Probably not. And the signs of if you have accidentally hired the wrong contractor, things to look out for to catch it early. Any contractor that insists on a significant upfront deposit. Every state has different regulations. Here in California, it's the lesser of $1,000 or 10%. So if a contractor ever asks you to pay anything more than that, that's a red flag because they will often take that deposit, maybe start with a little bit of work, and then disappear forever. Same thing, if you have trouble reaching your contractor for more than a few days, or God forbid the phone number doesn't work anymore, that's another major sign that things are not going well. That's a bad contractor to evaluate. So there's so many different things to look out for. But at the end of the day, the more questions you ask and the more time you spend meeting with your contractor, evaluating that contractor, the more likely you are to catch one of those red flags before it's too late.
Hey, you know, I'm just sitting there going, oh my gosh. But hey, folks, stick with us right back. We got more. John here is going to be talking about things that could save you money, reduce your stress, and understand how to go about proceeding with this. And so far, one of the big things is $1,000 or 10%. Never even knew that. Most people don't. So hey, stick with us. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we're talking about the ins and outs of money. I want to truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss the show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, AMFM 247, Talk Radio in New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. They're all dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of personal and financial freedom. Hey, you can always go to the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page and, you know, guest gift shows, the whole shot. I want to get back to John here. He's just giving us this insight. I'm just like, we start talking during the break. I'm like, stop. Everybody needs to hear this. So let's get back to when you're evaluating that contractor. You've talked about the, hey, no cash, no Zelle, no, you know, crypto, anything that somebody won't be able to track is really what you're saying. Mm-hmm. The other part is in certain states, there's limitations. So like in California, where you're at, hey, it's $1,000 or 10% of the value of the project, whatever's left. So if you've got a $50,000 project, the most they can get up front is $1,000.
Exactly.
And then you were talking about, hey, you know, they might say, hey, $1,000. And then tell everybody about that, because you know what? I think that one happened to me.
Yeah. So look, every contractor, and that's the interesting thing about the remodeling space, especially in residential construction like this, is that there's far fewer standards and requirements and structure, as opposed to in the commercial space or in the tech industry or anything else. So no two bids will ever look the same, and no two contractors operate their business exactly the same. So what we were talking about during the break is that one approach that some contractors will use that is not inherently shady, but it can be, is they ask you for that $1,000 deposit for the $50,000 kitchen remodel, And then they say, all right, but I need to purchase all the materials to make sure we can keep the project on track. So give me another $25,000 and that'll pay for cabinets and flooring and da 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 da. Some contractors don't do that because they have the cash flow where they have a written contract with the homeowner. They know that the money's coming in, and that enables them to go ahead and purchase materials on their own and then be reimbursed by that homeowner. That said, not all contractors do have the cash flow. So something that is not uncommon is contractors will say, okay, can you paid your initial $1,000, that's your deposit. But for us to begin work, we need you to pay $25,000 for materials. That could certainly be shady for all the reasons we just discussed. They can take your money and run. But if your contractor insists on that approach, it's not necessarily a red flag. It's not necessarily a take your money and run approach. That said, make sure that you get everything in writing, that all payments are recorded, all communication is recorded, and ask for receipts. Ask for proof that the materials have been ordered. Ask for shipment dates, delivery dates. Get specific clarity that you can confirm yourself and even call the supplier and verify that the money that you paid that contractor is going directly towards materials. That said, sometimes or fairly commonly, contractors will mark up the cost of materials, especially finished materials like this. So the price that he paid on the dotted line to the supplier may not be the exact number that you gave him. But nonetheless, you want to make sure you have track record. You want to have a paper trail of every dollar that you spend and know exactly where it's going.
You know, it was interesting when we got our kitchen remodeled, we used a designer. And basically what he did is said, hey, you know what, if you're looking for the countertops, why don't you go look at the ones that you'd like? And basically we went there and he goes, what I recommend you do is you pay them and then have that ship it. So when the contractor's there to do it, the materials are already there and you don't have to worry about it. And we thought that's a good idea. And then I found out later from somebody else, it's the guy saved me 20% on the markup.
Right. Right. I'd say that's a great approach. Not everyone wants to work with a designer because they see it as an extra cost, but that's an avenue where it makes a lot of sense. Because if you weren't working with a designer who I generally look at as the bridge, the intermediary between the homeowner and the more technical contractor, homeowners I've often seen that wanted to save that 20%, they decided I'll handle materials on my own. They didn't realize that handle materials on my own means you have to go to the store, you have to purchase the materials, you have to get the exact right amount and not too little. And it's your responsibility to get those materials to the job site. So I had a client some years ago that wanted to save the money. They decided that they would handle finished materials on their own. And then the day for flooring install came and the contractor said, where's the flooring? And the homeowner said, I bought it, it's at the shop. And the contractor said, you said you wanted to handle flooring. That means I'm not paying my guys to go pick it up for you. And that became some contention. So, and that said, not all contractors are comfortable with that arrangement because part of their business model is making a little bit of money on the materials. So if you do want to source materials yourself, that's an important thing to mention in the conversation early in the hiring process. Make sure that they're comfortable with it. And then also make sure that you have full clarity on the types of materials, the amount of material required, and what exactly is expected of you as the homeowner if you take ownership over that aspect of the project.
You know what? I'm going to say I'm saying that's what we did, but there was a lot more to that as I'm thinking about it, because basically that designer went with us, had all the measurements already. And when we selected something, he made sure that when there was things that were cut and all that stuff, they were already done. And pretty much everything was already, I want to say, it was just ready for installation. So all we had to do is it had to show up on a truck and be delivered, and that was it. So he did a lot of stuff there. And I'll just say this, the kitchen came out really, really, really well. And with the compliments my wife got, she was very happy with what went on. So yeah, there was a lot that the designer did to make it easy for us, even though we purchased it direct. But it's good to know that there's a lot more that's involved with this, and it's not that simple, especially for people who try to do things themselves.
Right. And just like what we said earlier about the difference that not all remediation contractors are the best remodeling contractors, not all general contractors are inherently designers. Some contractors that you work with have the experience and have an eye for design and would be happy to help you select materials and walk you through finishes and things like that. Other contractors, not so much. So that's the same conversation about, should I hire a designer for my project? Because like you mentioned, you paid that designer something, probably a percentage of the project, but because you got to work with them, they gave you really support, really important, valuable guidance, and also helped you save money on ordering the materials themselves.
Yeah, no, this guy just loved, you can tell he just loved what he did. So we were very lucky. So, you know what? You know, we kind of talked about how people have no choice but to feel like they've got to act fast, especially when some of the stuff is going on. But you know what? And you talked about some of the common red flags should give homeowners pause. But you know what? When people start looking, you know, vague and incomplete estimates, you know what, how do they turn into cost overruns once you begin? Because people just don't understand how, you know what, let's be real candid. I do what I do. You're a contractor. I'm not. So I know how to do a lot of things really well and probably could enhance your life with those things, but I know nothing. I mean, I barely can change a wall socket. Okay. And a light bulb if I'm lucky. But so when it comes to, you know what are those things that people really need to be looking at since they don't understand vague stuff? What's yeah. vague when it comes to an agreement when contracting? What's incomplete? Because, you know, what you don't know is the thing that costs you.
So that's what I call the homeowner contractor knowledge imbalance, right? It really comes down to the fact that contractors, like you said, they've done this for years. They do this work day in, day out, and they know how to have these conversations. Whereas the average homeowner doesn't have conversations with contractors or technical construction conversations more than once every few years, right? So because of that knowledge imbalance, the shady, unsavory contractors know how to take advantage of it. And exactly to your point, vague bids is one of the most common ways. Let's say we're talking about some water intrusion. There's a hole in the roof and it needs to be repaired. Well, if a contractor writes you a bid and says, I'll repair the roof, $10,000. Okay, but does that just include the shingles, or does that include materials and the labor? Does that include your markup? Does that include the cost of the permits? What if there's damage to the underlayment? Is that included as well? How do we handle situations when something unexpected comes up, right? So those vague estimates can be very capable of convincing a homeowner to hire the contractor, because a vague bid is typically a cheap bid. But that also means that that contractor most likely plans on sneaking in change orders once you've already contracted with them. So let's say the contractor said, oh, I'll patch the roof, $2,000. All the other bids you got were $5,000 to $7,000. So you're going to hire the cheaper one. And then once you hire them, once you sign the contract, once they've already peeled back your roof shingles and start doing the work, then they uncover, oh, you know, this underlayment needs to be patched, another $2,000. I need you to agree to this because we've already started the work. And, oh, you know what? There's actually some damage to the rafters as well. I think we should probably re-insulate in the crawl space as well. So it's going to be another $6,000. And what you initially thought was the cheapest bid now has significant cost overruns to where it's now costing more than what the other projects would have ended up being. So if there's not enough detail in the bid, that leaves a lot of room for interpretation, a lot of play in what you're actually getting and what you're agreeing to. So the more detail there is, the more or the less unknowns there are in the entire scope of work. And you have much more clarity on what is this project going to cost right now and what's it most likely going to end up costing once it's all done.
So at the end of the day, the devil's in the details. The more details you can get, the easier your life will be. So one of the other big questions that we had, and I would really like you to talk about this, is, you know, we talked about a little bit about the payment schedules. And could you just kind of reiterate those, you know, the big mistakes homeowners make when it comes to deposits, payment schedules, contracts after a storm? I know people are anxious to get things done. They're excited. They don't like the pressure of having a bad looking house and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you talked about, hey, you know what, $1,000 is the max somebody can receive to start something. But you know what? What are the other things? Like, how should, let's just do it like this. How should a payment schedule look if there's somebody's doing a 50, or if they have to, you know, rebuild a house, you know, a multi-$100,000 project? How should that look? What would be the payment schedule look like?
That's a great question. And honestly, I think that is one of the most important ways that homeowners can protect themselves is having, or rather only agreeing to, reasonable payment schedule. So like we already covered, step one is not a significant upfront deposit. The main point here throughout your payment schedule is you do not want to pay ahead of work that's completed. Technically, especially for a larger scale project that will be weeks or months of work, you want to tie every payment that you make directly to significant milestones of completion. So let's say you are building an ADU. After the foundation, payment number one. After framing and utility rough, payment number two. After drywall and flooring, payment number three, right? So making sure that you can evaluate the work, approve that, okay, this has been done. I can pay the contractor for completing this portion of the work, and then they can move on, right? That is the most important way to ensure that you're paying for work that's already done rather than throwing money at your contractor and hoping that the work gets done. And the other really important piece here is keeping typically 5 to 10% for punch list at the very end. Even the best contractors benefit from having a little bit of an incentive to finish the job, because many people will agree that the longest part of the project are the finishing stages, right? All the work seems like it's almost done, but maybe there's just a few more things that the contractor needs to take care of. Maybe we just need to get the final inspection completed. And for some reason, that's when a lot of contractors start dragging their feet. So if you hold that 5 or 10% of punch list of your total payment towards the very, very end and ensure that you only make that final payment once you are 100% satisfied, that's a really great way to ensure that you get the work done on time and to your expectations.
So when you talk about inspections, for example, you have to have city inspectors come in, okay? Help people understand how important that is and why that's kind of mandatory.
Right. So some of the things we've already talked about is the importance of having a licensed contractor. Licensed contractors are authorized by your state to do the work properly, to code the way that it should be done. And that ties directly to the importance of making sure that the work is done properly. And that's the importance of inspections. At the end of the day, yes, you hire your contractor as the expert, but you need an independent third party to verify the work. Again, that knowledge imbalance, the average homeowner can't look at some rough electrical panel and say, yeah, that looks good to me. We don't know what we're looking for. So that's when a city inspector will come out at different milestones of the project to evaluate your contractor's work, verify that it was done properly and to code, and essentially approve you to move forward. The worst thing that you want is a contractor to be doing phase one and then move on to phase two and then phase three. And then you bring in the city inspector to go look over everything that's been done and you realize phase one was done improperly. We have to rip everything out and start from scratch.
Now, let's understand who pays for that.
It's almost always the homeowner.
So even though the contractor didn't do what they're supposed to, and that's probably going to end up some sort of a legal issue as well if they've got to double down on that. So, geez. So that's really, really, very important. Okay, so let's talk about how homeowners can always confirm, but what they should be confirming before they hire a contractor, no matter how urgent the situation is. You know what? It's so funny how verifying something sounds simple. You put it on the task list and you forget about it, and you've hired somebody and you realize, oh, geez, I did the wrong thing. So let's talk through how somebody should just, you know, what are the things that need to be verified? How do they go about verifying them?
So that is essentially the core, the ethos behind why I started my company, Great Builds. And it's that when we're looking at contractors, doesn't matter if it's a plumber for a one-day job or a GC for a full kitchen remodel or bigger, we typically only have a few things that we that our hearts want to go off of. One is the price that they give us, right? The lowest bid often wins. And two, it's the vibe. It's how I felt when I was meeting with them. And, you know, if the price is right and he seemed like a nice guy, of course, everything should go perfectly, right? Unfortunately, that's often not the case. Some of the best salesmen are some of the worst contractors. So there are a lot of things that are important to verify. And if I were to say they're the top most important ones that are honestly some of the easiest. And one would be check your contractor's license. Insist that they give you their license number. If they hesitate for a second, run away. Get that license number. Every state has a state licensing board website that you can look up that number. In California, it's CSLB, cslb.ca.gov. And you can type in that license number. You can often even type in the owner's name and look up all the details about that contractor, how long they've been in business for, if they have a clean record or if there are any complaints on their license. And you can often also see the next two most important things to verify. And it's, does that contractor have insurance, both general liability insurance as well as workers' compensation insurance? And also verify if that contractor has a bond. The insurance, the bond, and the license are the main things that are there to protect you as the homeowner in case anything goes wrong. If there is damage done to your property or additional costs incurred, you can often go after that contractor's bond to recoup some of your costs. So that is one of the most important, or just checking your contractor's license, and then everything you can see within that interface is one of the easiest and also one of the most important things you can do. The next most important, or I'd say honestly just as important, is speak with references. Ask your contractor for a few references, ideally recent ones, not ones from a few years ago that might be their cousin or their husband, but ask for, can I please have the three most recent references for projects that you've recently completed? These are the opportunities for you to really get the voice of the customer, right? What was their experience like? Did the project come in on time? Did the project come in on budget? How did your contractor handle situations when something went wrong? Because especially for these larger scale projects, it's not a question of if something will go wrong, but rather when something goes wrong, is this the right team that's going to treat you with respect and resolve the problem effectively? And between talking to references and verifying their license and other coverage details, if you don't do anything else, those are the most important things to ensure that you are probably on the right track.
Okay, so this is really important. You just gave everybody the questions they need to ask to save themselves. The other question I have here, and it just came from a few of our viewers, is why should we verify workers' compensation? They have their own company, they have employees, they need to, you know, I mean, they should be taking care of that if somebody gets hurt. What happens if they don't have workers' compensation?
You know, if that contractor doesn't have workers' comp and either them or one of their crew gets injured on site, maybe from a nail gun, maybe from falling off of the roof, whatever it is, that contractor may be liable, but they don't have any coverage for it. And that means that the onus of any of that damage falls upon the homeowner. And actually, most homeowner home insurance policies don't cover that type of coverage as well. So it entirely falls upon the homeowner to cover the costs of any of those damage, whether it's hospital fees for that crew member to get fixed up, but it also is lost wages. It's anything that that business owner should be covering. If they don't have workers' comp, it entirely falls on the homeowner.
Wow. Hey, folks, stick with us. We'll be right back with more John here. We're going to talk about how to save yourself with a contractor.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we're talking about the ins and outs of money. Today we're talking about the ins and outs of making sure you don't get scammed by a fraudulent contractor, especially when these tough times. We've had some great pearls of wisdom here from John, but the last part is we want to talk about how artificial intelligence changing the way homeowners can evaluate contractor bids, especially when they do not have any contractor experience. So, you know what, let's talk about the AI approach because it could benefit a lot of people. And quite frankly, mom and dad, Joe and Maureen, or Don and Betty, they have no clue. But how can somebody go about using AI to help them?
So I actually just last week hosted an hour-long webinar at Maxible. It's posted on YouTube if anyone wants to check it out, all about how they can use AI to streamline the process of building an ADU. That said, many of those same tips and general guidance can be applied to any type of remodel. So there's tons of ways that you can use AI to protect yourself and make better informed decisions. But that said, I would love to talk about the AI tool that I've personally created to help homeowners compare bids. It's called Bid Compare AI. You can check it out on the Great Builds website or just go to bidcompareai.com. And I built this because, like I mentioned earlier, there is unfortunately no standardization in this space. You meet with five different contractors for a kitchen remodel, you get five completely different looking estimates. One might come in the form of an email. It might be three sentences. Hey, Joe, your kitchen's going to cost $38,000. Let me know if you want to hire me. That might be one of your bids. Another bid that you get might be one page with some chicken scratch on it and a total number at the end. And then you get two other bids that look really nice and formatted and detailed with line by line. But one of the bids is broken down by type of work, whether it's electrical or plumbing. And the other bid is broken down by room. So this is the cost for your kitchen. This is the cost for your bathroom, what have you. So when you get five different bids like that, for the average layperson, how do you really know which one's giving you the better deal or which one's just missing a great deal of detail? Like we said, a lot of people are typically inclined to hire the cheapest bid because they think they're getting the best deal. But oftentimes we realize, unfortunately, sometimes too late, that that cheapest bid was not actually the best deal. It just was missing the most things, right? So that's why I wanted to build a tool that helped homeowners demystify this concept of comparing bids. Because the most important thing that you should do when you collect estimates for projects is you line them up side by side. You compare them apples to apples, and you can very clearly see, okay, this bid includes finished materials. This bid does not. This bid includes the what ifs. This bid does not. And without doing that, then you will never truly know which bid is the right one, which bid is most comprehensive, and therefore you don't know which contractor to hire. So that's exactly what Bid Compare AI does in minutes. So all a homeowner has to do is collect multiple estimates. You'll probably get an email with a PDF file, something like that. Upload all of those PDFs to Bid Compare AI, wait a few minutes, and you'll get an email that has two really, really important documents. One is the bid comparison. It's an Excel spreadsheet that takes all the estimates, scans all of the detail within them, and lines them up in a grid format side by side. You see the top line numbers, you see all the scope elements, and whether it is included, is definitely not included, or unknown, unclear within the verbiage of the estimate. So that's really helpful to show you, okay, this contractor is charging this much for finished electrical. The other contractor is charging this much for finished electrical. So that's a really helpful starting point. But even with that, you are still just looking at a big sheet of numbers. So what do I do with it? So it also provides you with a bid analysis report. It's a multi-page document that walks you through the top level things to look for, the main price disparity between the two bids. And what I think is most important is it gives you follow-up questions to reach out to each of those contractors and say, hey, this detail within the estimate was unclear. Can you verify this for me? Or, hey, the other estimates that I've received had the allowance for materials around $10,000, but your allowance is only $4,000 or $5,000. Is that reasonable? Can you explain this disparity? And another really key detail here is using a tool like this can help you spot those red flags. It'll tell you if this bid is missing certain elements. It'll tell you if that bid is charging an unreasonable amount for certain elements. And that really helps level the playing field, level this homeowner contractor knowledge imbalance that I was talking about, and really helps you as the homeowner compete on the same level as that contractor and helps you make the right decision.
That's wonderful, because now you don't really have to have all the knowledge you need. You just need to be able to ask the right questions and get some clarity in order to make good decisions. Wow. Okay. If somebody's watching this, this is like the big thing. What is the single most important step they should take before signing any repair agreement?
The single most important thing, I'd say, if there is one thing to focus on, it's that payment schedule. Compare multiple estimates and make sure you're getting a fair price. And then before you sign any contract, make sure it is a fair, even payment schedule. So you're not paying too much money up front. You're only paying for work as it's completed, and you leave a little bit at the end to make sure that you get through punch list. Even if you make every other mistake in the book, this way you will never get ahead of payments compared to work completed. And God forbid the contractor is terrible and everything goes wrong, at least you're not too far ahead. At least you haven't spent too much money before you can back up and reanalyze the situation and maybe get rid of them and hire someone better.
Last question. If you have to get rid of somebody and hire somebody, how do you go about doing that? It's like, I've got like 200 people have asked that same question.
That is worst case scenario. As always, my advice is hire slowly and fire quickly, right? If you feel like you're in a rush to hire, take a step back, because it's a really messy, sticky situation to get rid of a contractor. If you have a signed contract, technically, you both have agreed to completing that work for the amount of payment that is promised. So if you need to get rid of your contractor, it needs to be mutual. If you just say, you know, I'm just going to stop paying him, that contractor can put a lien on your home and cause a lot more damage. So if times are tough and you've decided that no sort of remediation is going to help here, no communication with the contractor is going to get us to where we need to be, and you've decided you need to fire them, you need to get their approval and reach out to them cordially and let them know, look, it's been an okay time working with you, but we need to cut things off here. And either you or they can provide you a written agreement just to firm up that we're dissolving this contract. Everything moving forward is null and void. And then it's okay to bring in someone new to complete the work. That said, it's almost always, if the contractor's terrible, there's nothing you can do. But it's almost always the right move to try to remediate this or to mediate the situation. Because if you hire another contractor to finish the job, it's most common that that contractor will start from scratch. So they're going to rip everything out that that other contractor did, because maybe it wasn't a code. Maybe they don't want to put their name on it, because if something does go wrong, often the liability falls on the last person who touched it. So you want to make sure that you're protecting your wallet and you don't have to start from scratch every time.
That's wonderful. Hey, John, I want to thank you for being here. How can people get a hold of you? How they can get a hold of your comparative AI software, the whole shot?
Yeah. So if you live in California and you are looking for a reliable, trustworthy contractor, or if you need advice and guidance, we have tons of content and articles that we've written that can help homeowners all over the world. My website is greatbuilds.com. That's GREATBUILDZ.com. If you want to check out Bid Compare AI, it's just bidcompareai.com. And if anyone's looking at building an ADU, I know we didn't spend too much time today talking about accessory dwelling units, but if you are considering the project, want to learn more about the process and what goes into it, you can check out my other website, maximablespace.com.
John, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. Folks, we are going to make sure that greatbuilds.com is on our website. We're going to make sure that Bid Compare AI is on the website, so you can link to that. You're going to probably want to listen to this twice or three times, just because there's so many little ahas that can make a difference in your life. So again, John, I want to thank you for being here. Appreciate you. And you know what? We might even have you back again, especially when wildfires and everything kick up. It seems to be all the time. So, you know, just to keep the message out there. Hey, thanks for joining us today. John Grisball, you know what? Great builds, wonderful guests, great ahas here. Stick with us. Look forward to seeing you next time right here on Saving with Steve.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.